Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is another great episode with Angry Hedgehog Toys. Not only do we get to talk to him, but then we bring back our Nitty Gritty episodes for the Patreon. Finally, I get it. I hear you. They're back. If you want to jump on and support the show, a nice free way is to like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can follow us on all socials, boom, at Toys on Tap. You can jump on the Patreon for extra support, patreon.com/toysontap. And if you want to stay in the know about everything we have going on, the Toys on Tap newsletter can be found on our website, toysontappodcast.com. That is where you're going to stay up to date on all the toys that we're producing, any updates on the new one that's coming out with SNZ Toys, and all the goodness. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Hi.
What's up, Sam?
Hey, nice to meet you, Abe.
It's good to meet you. I'm glad you reached out when you did about, like, coming on the podcast and then looking at all your toys. You got some dope stuff happening over there.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah, I figured I'd reach out. Like, I don't post a whole lot. I recognize that. I hate all the social media stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't have the kind of quick release schedule that a lot of people do, so I figured, like, I'm probably gonna get buried in the algorithm at some point, so
yeah,
well, just reach out and let you know I'm here. So
heck no, yeah, so I mean, social media is the first thing that always goes, right? Like, everyone wants to create, they want to do art, all those things, and social media is 100% the first thing that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate doing it so much.
Yeah.
But kind of like a way you've got to do it. And if you don't do it that way, then you just never get any visibility. But
yeah. And no one really wants to be a social media manager. Like, that's such a difficult job.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that is crazy. Hey, I'm happy you're here. Thanks for working with me. I had a cancellation, so I was like, let's move you up.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So happy to help. We're here on it. Just like every other episode we do, we always start out, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm Sam Costadel. I go by Angry Hedgehog. During the day, I work on Happy Meal toys. And the rest of the time, I go by Angry Hedgehog and do designer toy stuff. I'm a Glios creator primarily now.
Do you work for Glios or whatever that company?
No, Glios is like an independent thing. So there's a bunch of different artists around the world. So, like, Warlords of War,
yeah,
he's one of the Glios artists, and that's kind of an indie thing that we're just doing sort of as a hobby. Well, primarily, most people are doing it as a hobby. I'm doing it as a hobby.
Awesome. I have like immediate first questions just to fire off. Let's talk Angry Hedgehog. What's the name about? What's going on?
Well, I loved Sonic the Hedgehog when I was young.
Yep.
That always kind of stuck in my head. Like, I've always been a huge fan of Sonic. And there came a point when I was just getting into the designer toy stuff and I needed a name. And I just posted on Facebook, this is a long time ago now, but I just posted on Facebook to my friends just saying, has anyone got any ideas? And someone that I was friends with had posted me, just sent me a little video of just this little grumpy little hedgehog that had been woken up and was real mad about it.
Yeah.
She'd sent me that earlier in the day, and she commented saying, what about Grumpy Hedgehog? And I was like, well, I don't know about grumpy, but I like Angry Hedgehog, so it just kind of stuck from there. Yeah,
which is like the most that I feel like that's the best way to find a name, right? Like, it just gets thrown at you, and you're like, "This is it."
Yeah.
And then Happy Meal toys. I mean, you're now the modern day Scott Hensey, man. Like, Scott did so many of Happy Meal toys. Now that's you.
Kind of. Yeah. So I work for TMS, and that's the marketing store. Scott mentioned it when you interviewed him. The company's been working with McDonald's for like 30 odd years or something. It's a really long time. And I don't know how the arrangement was back then. I was really interested when I heard that he used to work on them actually, and that he did some of the most iconic ones as well. I think the equivalent these days wouldn't be me. It would be the person that I go to. Like, I don't get to do the sculpting, unfortunately. I would love to, but I do design them, and I have to work to get them on cost and work out what the play feature is going to be, how big it's going to be, all of that kind of stuff. So it's you know, like anyone who's contracting another sculptor to do the thing, we have a company that does that for us,
Awesome.
but our team is doing the design, yeah.
Heck yeah. Let's walk it all the way back. No one gets into toys or does art toys without having a cool story with art and with toys in their background. So, tell me as a kid, what toys you playing with, all those things.
The first one I remember is actually a Barbie camper van.
Okay.
Bit of an odd one to start with. I don't remember a whole lot. I'm told I asked for it, but I think it was just because it was a massive vehicle. I've always been a big vehicles guy. And yeah, I played like with Action Men. Action Man was a UK, it was like the UK G.I. Joe. And they were like the 12-inch or 10-inch ones. So I played with this camper van for ages, and then my parents bought me one of these things, which I
Oh,
know is
yeah,
the
you have it.
podcast, but it's so what I'm showing this enormous spaceship, which is a Manta Force command ship. Inside it, it's got like I love this thing so much. I had to rebuy this recently, but it's got like 10 vehicles inside.
Holy jeez.
It's amazing, and it like I don't know, 20 figures or something. And they all come out and they've all got different features and stuff. And this thing was insane. And now I'm having trouble putting it down. But it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was so I'm a 1987 kid. So I'm just a little bit older than you. And we had all like it was still the era, and I'm sure it was for you as well, where there we could have toys that were just toys as well as all the licensed stuff. So I had like this was massive for me, this Manta Force thing. But then I was very lucky. I had a bunch of the things which kind of came around as crazes and you know the things that went around. I had like real Ghostbusters. And I had a Moby Lick Street Shark.
Yeah.
Thunderbirds was a huge one. So that's like a puppet show from the 60s. But they reran it in 1992 over here. And like the vehicles from there, again, it's vehicles again, like, but they were cool little rescue things, and like they had little like a little
That's
vehicle
rad.
inside it, and the show was awesome. I loved it very dearly, and my dad watched it when he was young, so we had some really nice like bonding time watching the
Yeah.
same show at kind of the same age, so that was yeah that was cool. And then I just had all sorts growing up, like other Gerry Anderson series like Thunderbirds. There was Stingray, Captain Scarlet, and Space Precinct, and again, wicked vehicle designs. And I really did gravitate onto the vehicles more than anything else. I had Ninja Turtles too, but it was the party wagon that I played with the
Yeah.
most. It's just rad.
I mean,
So
let's
yeah,
talk
that
about that monolith. What figure, like, what series is that? That, like,
which.
giant vehicle with all the vehicles and all the characters. Like, is that a
It
show?
wasn't. This is the thing. It was just a toy line, as far
Yeah.
as I know. There might have been like an animated advert for it. I need to find out. But I think there was like a very short run of comics. It might even just have been the ones that came inside the boxes. I didn't ever read it. It was just I've kind of projected onto this thing. It was like whatever I wanted it to be, which was so much fun. And I'm really, really tempted to try and find out if Mattel would sell the license to Manta Force. I would love to do something with it. It's such a cool,
Godzilla!
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right, Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
Such a cool thing. I've been buying up all the other toys in the range.
Yeah. For that, like, giant vehicle, I mean, buying a license, that's crazy. And I mean,
I have no idea how to do it.
I mean, who I would talk to is Last Resort Toys.
Okay.
So he works with Trash Bag Bunch. But how they used to do it then is if someone came to them with an idea, you kept the license and they licensed it from you. So whoever created this line potentially still owns the license. And then you can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I hope so. I know that it, because it was made by a company called Bluebird, who invented Polly Pocket.
And Mighty Max, yeah.
And Mighty Max, yeah. And they made all this amazing stuff. And they got bought by Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm presuming it's been wrapped up in that purchase. But I don't know how to look into it. I don't know who to sort of contact. I need to check with some people I work with who have contacts at Mattel. But
yeah. Now that's what this is going to end up being. All week, we're not going to do promotional. Just how do we find this license?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you possibly do the same. The fact that you had to rebuy the Mantiforce thing means that you gave up toys at some point.
I did. Yes. Not necessarily through my own choice. It wasn't like my parents like just binned them. Mm. But I didn't really have much of a sense of how much they meant to me. Like as you grow up, you kind of grow out of things.
Mm-hmm.
And things like passed by, and there would be like car boot sales, which are do you have car boot sales in the States? Or
okay, I'm gonna take a guess at what that is. Okay. So for us, I think it would be a yard sale. Like you just put stuff from your house on the driveway or the area and people walk up can buy stuff.
Same kind of deal, but I guess it's quite a British thing. There's like fields where loads of people will drive up in their cars and they sell it out of the trunk of the car. So they'll just drive their car onto the field. Usually they'll set up a little table just outside because it's easier. And then, we just sell out of there and it's just out.
Swap meet or something. We have those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Things fell by the wayside, and I didn't keep any of it. I mean, I kept a few bits. I've got a few bits up in the loft that my parents kept for me. Anything that they felt was special, they did keep.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it was special to me.
Yeah.
So I've got a bunch of random things from when I was really young that I just don't really remember.
Mm-hmm.
I did the usual thing and became a teenager and was more interested in girls and music. Never played music, but I big listener to it of it. When I went to so I'm possibly preempting the next question, but I did art all through childhood and into my teenage years, and I knew that I wanted to do something in art. I entered a competition in school. I loved the sculpture that I did. Any time we got to do it, but in my head I wanted to illustrate kids' books.
Okay.
And but there was a time where our class was invited to submit our sculptures to a Young Craftsman of the Year competition, which is just like it sounds grander than it is. It's like a local thing at a local show. But I submitted a piece into that, and so did a load of other people in my class. And I submitted, so I think the idea was that it was a nice art object. It was a craftsman thing. It was a very nice thing normal people would have on their shelves and things. But the piece that I entered was this like gnarly exploding hand. That had like a skeletal hand and like loads of like, blood made with like acrylic paint painted onto cling film. And this thing was gross. And one of the judges said that she had been a nurse before. She was like, I can't award you for this because it's so not like anything else. But she highly commended it. And she was like, have you ever thought of going to special effects? And I hadn't. And it just clicked. It really clicked. So that's what I went to study. And I studied model making. And on one of the trips that we had during the model making course, I went to a shop in the UK called Forbidden Planet, which is a, you know, there's not many like proper geeky shops that are well known over here. They tend to be little independent ones, but this is one of the big ones in London. And in there was a Spawn. No, it wasn't a Spawn. It was just like a McFarlane figure, but it was like a Cyber Spawn series. It was like a repainted line. But I saw this thing and it just looked mean and like nothing I'd seen before. And I was like, that's cool as hell.
Yeah.
That's actually really cool. And I was like, I was only like 19 or something, but I was like, I'm an adult now. I can use my own money.
Yeah.
And I bought this thing and that kind of kicked it off again. Like I was like, okay, toys, there's something in this.
Okay. So only a small hiatus then. Because to come back at 19, that's like the height of me chasing girls. So to come back at 19.
I was still chasing girls, but it was, I just had this, that seed was sown.
Yeah. Then. That is crazy to come back and the first thing you get is a McFarlane toy.
Yeah. And I can't stand them now.
Yeah. They've kind of gone by the wayside, but that is cool. So what does that kind of set for you as a trajectory? I mean, and then with this in mind and special effects, do you then head to secondary school or university?
So, this was already at university.
Okay.
So I probably played with toys later than most kids probably would have, maybe like into 10 or 11 or something. But
yeah,
that short gap. And then I was at uni. And because of it was a model making course and we were doing stuff that was intended for film and stuff like that, I kind of started having these roads opening to me, the places, the kinds of things that I would do. Like we were learning on this course how to cast, how to mold and cast and how to get a nice finish on things. So all of the kind of stuff that nowadays you'd learn with the Craftsman or whatever on YouTube. YouTube wasn't around, but we were getting taught it at uni. And that figure really start something in motion, because I thought, well, hell, people are making toys and that's a thing that exists. And I spoke to one of my tutors and he had worked on some in the past, and I ended up getting some work experience at a company called Design Works, and they were working on the Doctor Who action figures. And this is like 2007. So this is right when Doctor Who had started its resurgence. And I got some work experience there, and I was painting decoration masters of these figures. It was awesome. And from that point on, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I don't care about special effects for film. I just want to make toys.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, to get one of your first gigs is like painting these things. What are your paint skills like? Like, there's no way that I'm getting put on a paint team.
I mean, it's, they're not great. but it's like, we were using like Warhammer paints.
Yeah.
Citadel paints. When you're painting an action figure and it's something that's going to be produced,
mm-hmm.
you're looking for large areas of flat color. You're not really going too into the detail of it. I was never doing any faces. I was nowhere near good enough to do faces, but I would do like, I'd paint the tie or paint the, I don't know, I don't know what it was. It was yeah. just like little details on it. And it wasn't that big a deal because in production, it's going to be a spray mask over an area and then it's all going to be a solid color. So long as it provided an indication of where the paint was going, it was kind of good enough. I did a bunch of those. I cannot remember. I can only remember like one that I did. I did a lot. Where I can't remember which they were, but it was cool.
How did that kind of set your trajectory in your field of work then? I mean, this, cause you no longer do that kind of stuff.
No. I mean, I would have loved to keep going doing that. They were pretty, I went back a couple of times to do more work experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was all kind of set for a job there after I graduated.
Yeah.
And I graduated in 2009 and we had this huge global financial crash.
Yeah.
And suddenly it went from
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
Don't even finish your course. You know, you can come and work for us straight away to we've had to fire people and there's no job. So my degree show where I had everything, there was just no industry people coming around. And I was like, well, hell, what am I going to do? I searched for a couple of months trying to find somewhere in the toy industry. It's not huge in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So there weren't that many places that I was aware of at the time. And I ended up getting a job at a company called Seymour Powell, who are a product development agency. And they, like all like people who train in industrial and product design know this company. They're quite a big one. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
But because I was going as a model maker, it was a bit of a different kind of thing. And I managed to get a job there. And I've worked there for a few years and it wasn't ever going to be toys there. But I learned a lot of good model making skills there and stuck with it. Eventually it was just like, I'm never going to do toys if I stay here. I love the people I worked with. I had a lot of good times there, but it was just not, I wasn't going to progress into toys. And I heard somewhere on the internet that there was going to be another series of Thunderbirds made.
Mm.
This is like 2013-ish, maybe 2012. And I looked up who had made the toys for the last time Thunderbirds was around. So it got repeated again in like the early 2000s. And I checked who did the toys for that, and it was Design Works. And I was like, damn, like, I wonder if I can get back there. And I tried, and thankfully they took me back. So I got back into Design Works. which was wicked. And I worked on the toys for the 2015 show,
which is so insane.
It's amazing. Like I had, you know, I had them when I was young, and then I got to work on the new versions of them.
Does the new version still do the cool thing the old version did?
It does. It does. So,
oh, that's so good.
Still have the little vehicle inside.
So good.
And I got to work on. So I didn't like sculpt these or anything, but I was like the in-house Thunderbirds expert.
Mm-hmm.
And advised a lot on stuff. And in the show, all of these machines are like kept on this island called Tracy Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they like come out of, like one of them blasts out from underneath a swimming pool. And this big green one, there's like palm trees lining a runway, and they like fall back, and then it rolls down the middle. This is like ingrained in British consciousness.
Yeah.
It's really iconic stuff. But this Tracy Island thing is a huge thing. I never had the playset when I was a kid, but I got to basically design what the new one would be. Because we had all these stills from Weta, who actually did the animation. And it was like, okay, we've got this enormous island that is properly to scale. How the hell do we make a playset out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there cutting up bits of foam board and kind of mashing it together with like poster tubes and stuff to kind of get it to the right shape. And so I worked on that a lot, which was awesome. And that was it. Like I was like, I've made it. Like this is,
yeah. I'm at my peak and my pinnacle. Yeah. I mean, what's it like playing with, I mean, the dream for me and what has been for me is that like now running a toy podcast where I'm interviewing people that make toys or that made toys for me when I was younger, like that's insane. But what's it like for you to have played with these toys and now are the in-house voice of the new version?
It's such a dream come true. It really is. I was absolutely made up when these toys came out. It had been like a life goal of mine to have a toy that I designed in that Forbidden Planet shop that kicked everything off.
Yeah.
And they had the Thunderbirds in there. And like, there was just this moment where I was stood in that shop looking at the toy that I'd made. I was like, wow, I can't believe it. It was amazing. It was just absolutely amazing. And I've always had these toys on my shelf ever since. I they'll never get put away. Yeah. I might swap them out for, you know, just a bit of space here and there because we did some really big versions as well. But it was such an honor to be able to work on them. And I'm so glad that I really annoyed a lot of people trying mm-hmm. to get that gig. Like I was not sort of, you know, there were people more senior than me in the company who probably would have preferred that job, but I fought tooth and nail for it.
Yeah.
And I got it. And
it pays to be annoying sometimes.
It does. Yeah.
Like if you want something and there's a way to get it, but you don't try for it, do you actually want it?
Exactly.
So how long do you stay at this company? I mean, to be at the pinnacle of what you thought would be your end. Like this is, you've made it. You're the hero. You're everything, but you don't work there anymore.
I don't know.
So what happened?
The company sucked to work for. For all the good stuff that it had been when I was there doing work experience, I don't know why, but I couldn't gel with the people that were there when I went back.
Yeah.
I just didn't get on with them and I couldn't pass. There was a barrier that I couldn't get through. And I wasn't enjoying it there. I enjoyed the work. I loved the work, but the actual experience of being at this company was, you know, not working for me.
Yeah.
And this is a company that wasn't focusing on toys. Like this was client work for they were called Vivid Imaginations at the time. They're called Goliath now. But so it was, you know, the job's done. And then it goes away and suddenly we're not doing toys anymore. And I was like, well, like, I don't know how many times this is going to, I don't know how much of this work I'm going to get to do. I want to do more of it. And I was so done with working at this place. I went to the UK Toy Fair just because it was, you know, professional curiosity. I want to go to this fair. And I saw this company there called Wow Toys.
Yeah.
And it's a preschool toy company. Mm-hmm. This is like, they're not doing anything that anyone's ever heard of. No one's heard of this company out in the wider world. And they don't do stuff for clients. It's not licensed. It's just their own designs. And they were hiring. And I thought, do you know what? I'll give it a go. I'm not a designer. I'm just a model maker. But all of the time in the background of this, I've been working on bits for myself. Like I did a couple of custom action figures just to kind of do something for myself after hours. And I got an interview there and got the job. They definitely took a chance on me because I had to learn a lot in that job. But yeah, I ended up working there for about 3 years. Did some cool preschool stuff.
Nice.
I apologize if there's like a squeak on the mic, but the toy is a bit squeaky. But there's a monster truck that the head of marketing came to us one day and was just like, so what do you guys have in your ideas bucket for next time? And I was like, I think a monster truck would be cool. Never expected them to say yes. And we got to do a monster truck. So you push down the it's got like the engine bit that comes out the front. I do not know the ram scoop or whatever it is. I should probably know that, to be honest. But you push that down and the mouth opens, and that's like just completely ripped off of what was it? Hot Wheels Attack Pack in the 90s, which were these rad with monster trucks, and that you just push down a little hook at the back and they opened up and had these teeth inside. They were awesome. So I just ripped that off massively. Used the colors from Jurassic Park Explorer without telling anyone, and made a monster truck that I'm pretty proud of.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point, I mean, you said by this point you'd made, we're not Angry Hedgehog yet at this point.
No, right? It happens at the point I get this job.
Okay. Actually, and so you started making action figures for yourself. So you're already dabbling in that stuff. What's the catalyst that pushes you from just normal theft of a monster truck to toy creator?
So it was ToyCon in the UK.
Yeah, ToyCon is rad.
Yeah, it's awesome. Are you coming over for it?
I want to so bad. There's no way I can make it happen.
That's such a shame. But yeah, the first ToyCon was in 2013, and I went thinking this is a toy industry thing. Mm-hmm. I thought this is going to be action figures. This is going to be all the stuff that I want to work on for my career. This is great. And I got there, and it was all designer toys, and I'd never seen these things before. And I didn't know what to make of it. I was like, what is this? These are just people like selling stuff that they've made. They've made this stuff. And it was crazy to me that this scene had been going for several years at this point. Like, and I got chatting with a woman called Penny there, and she goes by Tailored Curiosities. She doesn't really do it anymore. But she was so warm and spent a really, probably way too long talking to me. And we just hit it off and got chatting. And I thought, God, what a lovely person. And as I went around the room after that, I had a great conversation with her, and then I managed to have some great conversations with some other people as well. And I just thought, what an amazing community this is. These people, these artists are making stuff that they want entirely as they want to, and they're making it and selling it. I never thought that would be, and it never occurred to me that that was a thing that people could do. And straight away, I was like, I want to be here. I want to do this. And so I started working on something, and all the stuff that was there was like static sculptures, you know, your typical designer toy stuff, yeah. Right? It's resin. It's, you know, there was a couple of bits of vinyl. And because I'm coming from wanting desperately to get into the toy world, I'm like, well, I want articulation. I want like loads of joints on a figure. And I worked on something over the next year, and I couldn't quite finish it, but I got something at the next ToyCon. And then the one after that, I had the Warden. Who is this guy who is completely fully articulated and 3D printed. It's 3D printed using a material called SLS.
It's massive. Which is,
yeah, it's really durable, this material. Really hard wearing. I could throw this around and it probably wouldn't break. I'm not going to. Yeah. But yeah, like I had it's all jointed like you would typically see on an action figure, and because I'd tried doing this actually. One of the things I made at uni was, because everything was toys, I made a toy prototype at uni of this blue guy, Spectre, and I had joints in him, but I couldn't get them to function because he's too heavy, and I was like, I've got to get articulation figured out. And that's what I did with the Warden. I was like, the limbs are too heavy and they're just gonna get loose over time, so how can I control that? So I did it with screws, nuts and bolts, and a little grub screw which doesn't have a head on it, so you can sink it into a part and you don't see the bolt on the outside, and so you can loosen it and tighten it and turn it into a statue. And I brought that to my second ToyCon, and it was, they sold. I only brought like four, I think, but they all sold. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's a crazy figure. It's big. Do you still sell the Warden?
I haven't been for several years.
Okay.
But I do plan on bringing it back this year. I have the parts in one of the cupboards behind me, and I need to just have some time to sit down and paint them and put them together. But I loved making them. I loved making them. So I do want to bring them back. I ended up making like 10 or 12 over a few years, possibly a few more, some as commissions. And I felt like they were expensive because they were like a couple of £100.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be. And I just thought, you know, people aren't always going to be going for this. It's going to be a few people. I just wanted to try and do something else.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray. We're saved, DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures! DKE!
Because I've never really stuck to... Despite being massively into vehicles as a kid, like, now I've done loads of different things over the years. The next thing after the Warden was completely different. It was a little resin toy called Boo.
Oh, yeah.
the little ghost with a removable mask that was cast in clear resin. And they sold out really quickly. Again, I didn't have many, but they sold out at the show, and I was like, hell yeah, this is great. And I kind of moved to those for a little while.
It's crazy that you are jumping in so radically fast. So it's like, I go to ToyCon, I want to make toys, I have a booth at ToyCon, which is wild. And then to bring the Warden, which out of the gate, so much articulation, so much posability, which as a side note, is it cheaper to just sell that as a pack to someone that they can customize and build?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Make the pack.
There's like 80 parts in it. So it's a nightmare for anyone who hasn't seen it before.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. Okay. Cause in my head, I just think of like a giant sheet of like, do you guys have IKEA in the UK?
Yeah.
It just feels like an IKEA booklet of like, let's say you build the Warden. Good luck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's, never really wanted to do the detailed instructions.
Yeah. So you do that, you sell out of the Warden, and to sell out, to have, let's say, four or five, but they're each a couple hundred pounds, that's not cheap. And so to still sell out, people are seeing something good.
Yeah.
And then you bring Boo, which this little fun ghost character that has a remove, like your skills are upgrading as you're doing like all this and you're just selling out. So like, what's this, you become Angry Hedgehog, you settle on that, you settle on the logo. What's it feeling like at this time that you've gone to ToyCon twice and sold?
It was awesome. And the, you know, the day job at work doing the preschool toys was ticking over, and that was really good. And I was doing this stuff in my free time in the evenings and weekends, and I was just having a great time. It was awesome. The Boos kept like doing pretty well. They just took a really long time, a lot of work to make, because they're clear resin.
Yeah.
And the way I designed the body and designed the mold, the split line was a nightmare to clean up. And I'm really, really picky about getting it right and sanding off the split line from the mold. And it was great fun. I liked having the product there, but the process of making it sucked.
Yeah.
it really sucked. And it was a great time. And I was coming up with ideas for all different things and doing a little bit. It was really focused on ToyCon each year. And then I might have like one or two sales around the rest of the time, just for having, that's all I really had time to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the attention of Martian Toys.
Okay.
With it. And they approached me and asked if I wanted to do a custom show with Boo. Back in, it must have been 2015 or 2016.
Early on, holy moly.
Yeah. So I, you know, this is the first, I haven't really done much custom work for other shows. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple of pieces here and there, but I didn't really, you know, I've come from the Warden to Boo, completely different things. I don't know what my style is at this point. And so anyone who invites me into a custom show, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And then I have a really like stressful time, because I'm just like, I don't have a style that I'm putting on this. I'm just doing a custom thing. It doesn't really feel like the right thing.
Yeah.
But the opportunity to have Boo be the platform comes around, and I'm delighted, absolutely delighted. And Martian Toys, they were like, okay, well, we'll sort out artists stateside.
Mm-hmm.
And I sorted out artists in the UK and Europe, and we ended up with 80 artists from around the world customizing Boo.
A lot to keep track of.
It's a lot to keep track of. Yeah. I didn't think it was going to be anywhere near that many. it was supposed to be like 30 each or something like that. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they invited loads more people, I guess, because some people weren't returning them or something. But we had a lot of pieces in that show. And it was crazy. It was crazy. My parents came up to ToyCon to see this show. It was like, it was cool. And I thought, well, this is it. Like, I'm successful. I couldn't believe it, but I could go somewhere with this. Like, mm-hmm. I've had a lot of really great reception on this. And I thought, I mean, the custom show ended up being a nightmare. Mm-hmm. The show itself was great, but Martian Toys, not a great partner to work with. I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I didn't have a good relationship with them. Didn't have a good time at all. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to get another one of those, and I'm kind of pissed off with this as a thing. But it was successful. I should try and make the most of this. And at the time, I was engaged, and my fiance at the time was working a good job in finance, earning good money, and she was like, look, if you want to have a go at this and try and do it full time, go for it. I'll support you. And so we built a workshop in our back garden. Mm-hmm. And I had a spray booth, I had casting equipment, I had everything I wanted in there. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Loved that workshop so much. And it was great. And I started cranking out booze. They were way too much work. And suddenly it went from a nice little hobby into, oh God, I've got to do everything.
Yeah. That is such a bad progression.
It is. It's
the fun. The fun leaves. Everyone wants to make toys until they make toys.
Yeah. It sucked.
Yeah.
It was lonely more than anything else. It was lonely. I was just in my workshop all day, sanding the same things, like sanding the same bits of the arms, all day for so many days. And I would have to pay out for materials. I'd have to pay for silicone resin, the postage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Boxes, bubble wrap, it was taking up so much space, and then having to do all of the social media stuff.
Yeah.
Having to market the sale, arrange the sale, set up a website, and then when the sales come in, deal with customer service, get the things packed up, shipped out. There's so much in it, and the amount of time you actually get to do toys is very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I got quite burnt out with it, but I kept on. I kept trying. Had a few little bits over the years. The booze kind of shifted into a really little version just because I could make so many more of them. I really had to start thinking the boo is not, I can't sell it for enough to make what I need to make in order to really earn a living here. And I am trying, even though,
yeah,
my wife at the time was supporting me, I was like, I want to be on my own two feet. I want to make something of this. I've got to take it seriously. So it became about, how can I make things more efficiently?
Mm-hmm.
How can I make them easier for me to make? And stuff shifted in that direction for a while. And it was okay. I would make good money at ToyCon, but the whole rest of the year I was spending out so much on materials, I couldn't really keep up with those initial expenses. And it started to get a little bit too much. And we're coming up on 2020 now.
Okay. Which we all know was the best year. We saw friends and hung out with fam. Oh, the best. Yeah.
Yeah. We managed to get a ToyCon in the day before we went to lockdown.
Okay.
And a bunch of people dropped out. We were meant to have Chris Reiniak and Amanda Louise Spade coming over, which was like a big draw for people. And then they announced that they weren't going to make the trip, which is, you know, definitely the right decision. And we had the show, and I don't think anyone got COVID from that show because it was right at the beginning. But that was it. We were suddenly in lockdown. And for all the time that I had already shut myself away and was thinking this isn't working, suddenly the choice was taken away. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's okay when you're choosing to be by yourself. And like, I could go out and see friends anytime. And then suddenly it was like, no, you can leave the house once a day for a walk. And I just, it was awful. It was such a hard time. And it's been really interesting listening to the podcast and hearing about all these artists that came up because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I've found that absolutely fascinating because I was just so different to my experience at the time.
Yeah.
And in a bad place mentally. And I probably, you know, I'm sure I could have made a bit more from it, you know, taking more out of the opportunity. But it wasn't a good time. And I started thinking, well, I can't leave the house, but I've got to find a job because I've got to speak to some people now. But it was a terrible time to do that. So, you know, 2021 kicked around and I started taking on a few freelance jobs here and there. I'd started working on I'd done these little, it was just a weird little fun project to try and free my brain a bit from all the stuff that was going around in it. I started doing these, like, I called them ride-on robots.
Mm-hmm.
They were just little fun fan art things. Like, I did a little, they were all mechs. So they were all a walking robot with a little tiny figure that would sit inside. And I did like a Thunder Tank, but turned it into a mech. Did the Party Wagon, turned it into a mech. I did it like a Rancor and made a robot version of that.
Yeah. All 3D designed.
All 3D designed,
okay.
But I never printed one, which was a tripod from The War of the Worlds.
Wait, so these exist, but we haven't shown the world?
They're on my Instagram. They
okay.
are
okay.
like deep there somewhere. But I really wasn't sure if I could do anything with them because I'm like, I want to work in the toy industry. I want to work with licenses. I really should not be infringing upon IP. That feels like career suicide for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very jealous of all the people out there who get to do it. And it's just like, you can obviously do whatever you want. And with what I'm doing now, I do want to do homages, but I have to be quite careful because I'm literally these days, I'm literally in meetings with the licensors. Mm-hmm. So I do try and be careful with it. Very careful. So these things, they were just a fun project for me. And I was like, I can't release these. I don't think I can, because the second that I do, suddenly that's the IP infringement. So I was like, well, I really liked this. I really enjoyed this. And I'd picked up from a ToyCon a few years before that, a Glios figure. And I'd heard about it. And just been sort of fiddling around with it. And I didn't really get it for the longest time. It must have been like 3 years I had this thing. And just occasionally got it out, fiddled with it a little bit, and then would put it down. And I don't know what it was, but I had these ride-on robots, and then I just picked this thing up, and it just twigged for me. It finally was like, there's something in this. Like, I get it. I get why this is so good. And I get how I can use it. So I contacted Matt Doughty, an L Design. He's the creator of Glios.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, look, I've been doing these things. I would really love to make them Glios compatible. Would that be okay? And he responded. He was very gracious. He said, I like the work that you've been doing. I think because it's IP stuff, probably not. That could potentially rain down hellfire on all of us. Like, so not that, please, but if you have something that you think of in the future, you know, let me know. And I was like, that is absolutely fair enough. And I just, the cogs started turning. What else could I do? And I just sketched this robot, this horned robot, out one evening. And I thought, there's something in this. I quite like this. And I just started messing with it. And I went through so many versions of it. And that became my Glios figure, the Hoplite. Mm-hmm. But that was the seed of it. It was in lockdown whilst having a horrible time. And I started on that project in 2020, I think.
Was your goal to move away from Boo as a whole because you were burnt out on that and that kind of figure as you head to these other ones?
Yeah, Boo had... I knew that I couldn't do more of the original Boos. Mm-hmm. I'm still considering bringing it back in some form, but the production of it was just too much for me. I played around with, you know, maybe I'd do this in vinyl. And I had managed to get a vinyl figure sort of on the go at this point. I think this is probably whilst I was working on that. And I thought I could do Boo as a vinyl. That would be interesting. And I looked into it and I got costs from the factory, and Boo's thing is the mask that it wears, and that is different. Every time the mask is different. So I can get the body produced in vinyl, but it's not actually saving me any money if I'm then having to do the masks by hand and I'm looking at higher production numbers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't viable for me to get the factory to do the masks. I'm sure there's a way that I could figure that out now. Like,
yeah, let's talk after.
I just don't need to have different masks.
Let's talk after the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they were fun. They did well at the time. I only had two series of them that came out. But they did pretty well. But yeah, like Boo, I was like burnt out from Boo, trying to think what the next thing was. Gromp was the vinyl figure that I had on the go. And this was with Corey. And so vinyl's stuck. He does articulate. Oh, there we go. So he articulates a little bit, and this was just a sketch that I had done just randomly, and they messaged me on Instagram, were like, hey, like, I mean, I knew them anyway because they run ToyCon, but they were like, we would be interested in producing it for you. So we've done that. We've done a couple of versions of that, and they've sold those through their site. At the time that this was happening, though, my relationship with my wife broke down. So terrible timing, because Gromp had like literally just come out, and I was not in a good mental place to do any promotion for it, and I couldn't really get behind it in the way that I would like, and because I left her, which meant that I left my workshop and all my tools and, you know, my financial support. So it was a really tough decision to make, but I had to do it, and I'm glad that I did. It was the right decision for me. But it went from I'm making these things in my workshop and I can do quite a lot of it myself, to oh damn, I can't produce anything anymore. Mm-hmm. I was back home with my parents in my sister's old bedroom. And I had like, I was working and sleeping in the same room. It was like going back, it's going back to being a kid again. but it sucks. And I was there for a couple of years and just trying to get myself back on my feet, trying to find a job, which eventually I did, which is the job I have now. But the need for the inability to produce anything anymore really was like, okay, I've got to figure out a different way that I can do this. And the Glios figures, the Colossi, I had kept on with those. My drive for those was that never wavered. As soon as I got started on that, I was like, I've wanted to make a modular robot system, like a modular robot toy, like my whole life. It's been something I would have always loved to do. And now I'm doing it. Like, I've got to keep this up. And I did, and I pushed through. And it took 4 years in the end to from that first point of contact with Matt to actually having them happen and be made in PVC. But I couldn't do them in resin anymore. And they barely, I could barely get them to work in resin anyway. They're very, very technical. I know people like the God Beast are doing it, and they're able to do it, and they're, I don't know how he does it. He's an incredible caster.
Yeah.
But I couldn't match that. When I did and I got the function of it, I couldn't paint the damn things because it was a flexible resin and the paint would just come straight off. So I was like, I've reached the end of what I can do with this. Again, I reached out to Matt and I've worked out something and we've figured it out. You know, a lot of the hurdle as well was distribution. You know, I could have kickstarted these things and, you know, made maybe one. But if I'm selling them from the UK, the audience for Glios is in the States. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to sell any of them. So I've partnered up with Cappy, who is very well known in the Glios community. And together we've made these things a reality, and it's been amazing.
And they're beautiful figures. It's crazy to see how good they are and like how well they function and seeing all the pictures and stuff. How many came out when you first launched?
I think there was like 7. So I've got 2 sculpts. So that is the Hoplite, which is that guy that had the horns. One of the other heads has the horns on from what the one that I'm showing you now. And the Centurion. Mm-hmm. Centurion is a bit of a skinnier one. And when I was working on this, I knew I had this horned guy and he was looking really good. And I kept thinking, like, the robot that I made while I was at uni, Spectre, was I've made versions of that character all through my like life, really. Mm-hmm. I made the first one when I was, I have it here actually. I made the first one when I was 16. And in a like a graphic products class. And it's just made out of styrofoam and it's falling apart now.
But oh, he's great.
This was like, I was really into the Games Workshop Eldar at the time. So it's very Wraithlord shaped. I need to stick him back together. But I made this thing when I was 16 and I then came back to the character when I did my art foundation. And then at uni, when I did that sort of early attempt at articulation, and I was like, I love this character. I keep coming back to this character. I can't release a robot toy and not do him. Like that would be such a shame. So I worked him up, and the character that of Zero that I released in that first wave is very much a mix of Spectre and the Warden.
Heck yeah.
So he has like DNA from both. I need to do a retrospective on the journey of this, but like the thighs are the same, the legs are kind of really similar, and I've used bits from both of them. And so there's two sculpts, and we had Talos and Zero. So they were the two main characters, as it were. And then we had some in a silver colorway that is one that has been done time and time again within Glyos. So that's kind of for people who build with them, because you can mix all the parts around, mix and match the parts with Glyos. So people who have existing collections, that's one of the really popular colorways. And and so we had something for the builders. We had sort of my characters, and then we had some like blanks, not blanks, but close to blanks, that were just, a lower price point. But it was quite a big first release, and we sold out. Like, I think Cappy sold out within an hour, I think. And I [S2] Wow. [S1] Sold out over a weekend. So it was awesome.
I mean, it's crazy that you get to come up with an original IP, get to Glyos and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And functionally going to a factory and doing molds and everything, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
It's cheaper with different materials, but doing that style, it's pretty expensive. And so for a company to say, like, we got this, like, we can help, we can figure this out, and then you get your IP out there, is insane.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I pinch myself every time I work on it. And it's such a wonderful thing to get to do. And I am honored to have been accepted and invited into the Glyos community.
Yeah.
Really great group of people.
Holy moly. And so when this comes out, you've just leveled up over and over again in your art career. So you start with toys, you go to ToyCon, sell out a couple of years in a row, shut down, workshop, now Glyos. So like, what, that kind of brings us up to current day.
Yeah, kind of.
And
yeah.
So what's next for Angry Hedgehog?
Well, I've got my next drop is, do you know what? I should check this before I say the wrong thing.
Also, can you, while you're looking, can you hold up Boo while you're looking for the dates so I can see Boo?
So the one I'm holding up is the, oh my God, I forgot what I called him. I might have just called him the Magma Boo. I can't remember, but it was, like a lava orange with a stone mask that's inspired by Shadow of the Colossus.
Great figure.
Thank you. I did a second series, and there's like a fish guy in that range.
Oh, awesome.
He was like the biggest seller of all of them, that one. But he was like my least favorite of that particular way. But that's how it goes. April 5th is my next drop.
Okay.
I got confirmed the other day, so very excited about that. And that will be, I don't know whether it's going to be. I don't know when's this going.
It comes out on Monday, so it'll come out definitely before.
Okay, so I mean, there's an etiquette to announcements, and I probably shouldn't announce what it's going to be, but it is an homage wave. You can see them.
It looks great.
It's a. I will tease that it is an homage to a popular late 1980s, I think, British toy line that was based on an American one.
Great. They look so good.
Thank you. I think I can safely say all that stuff. But yes, so the next drop is the 5th of April. Very excited about that. I've got ToyCon next month, so that's the 3rd and 4th of May. And I will be bringing these figures. This will be the first. I haven't exhibited at ToyCon for a couple of years, just because getting up to speed and sorting out my life and everything, but this is the first time for a couple of years I'll be back there, so I'm super excited about that. I've got another UK show called Toy Art. That's in September. I think that's it for shows for me this year. I'm soon going to be placing my next few like orders of figures of these designs. And really, this is my like nice thing that I get to do at the end of the day to sort of develop these guys. Now I am planning the next figures, or I will when my day job dies down and I can actually have some time to breathe. I'm trying to think of what the next ones will be. I've had a couple ideas and I showed some people at Legions Con last year, but they're quite expensive ideas. So that was an idea that I had, a sculpt. Well, I haven't sculpted anything yet, but I had a sketch of like a dragon based mech, because it's really a huge inspiration was Power Rangers, and my friend had Megazord and I had Dragonzord. So like if I've made a thing that's kind of looking a little bit like Megazord, I've got to do a Dragonzord.
Right.
So I really want to do that one. And there's a sketch as well for another robot that's on like caterpillar treads. But it might be something a lot smaller and a lot cheaper. Just because that would be like a lot of there's been a bit of a swing in GLaDOS like figures that have come out recently towards really fun little guys.
Okay.
And I really would love to do just a fun little guy. So yeah, I'm gonna see what's I've got to figure that out yet. I've got loads of ideas, and I kind of want to do a little series of tiny vehicles to go with these sort of, obviously these are tiny figures, but these are giant robots in my head. So I could do like loads of tiny little vehicles that go with them, or I could do little robots. I don't know. I've got to play around with it some more, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
Heck yeah. That's so exciting. Dude, it's been so good having you on the podcast. The last bit of the podcast is where you get to plug things and where they can buy these figures and everything, and where they can find you if they want to work with you. So please plug away.
Cool. So you can find me on Instagram, Angry Hedgehog Toys. And you could, my shop is angryhedgehogtoys.com. If you're buying GLaDOS stuff, that's sort of meant for the UK. Any GLaDOS stuff that I do is also sold by Cappy in the States. So buy from him if you're in the States, because it will be much cheaper for you with postage. I have a blog for the Colossi on colossiofchaos.com, but it's not, I need to update it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.